Indeed. And with our split show tonight, we've got John Hogue coming up next as we talk about his predictions. And we'll also talk about Nostradamus in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, those of you who have listened to the program for years, I really don't have to give you an introduction of John Hogue. You know him, but you who join us quickly and new, John Hogue writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He is definitely considered a world authority in Nostradamus, best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been published in 18-plus languages and has appeared on radio and television shows on three continents. And he's going to be, by the way, appearing on an episode of the History Channel's documentary series, Decoded. And he'll tell you a little bit about that later, too. Hey, John, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Hey, George. It's good to hear your voice.
You too. Hey, are you going to be out at Conscious Life in Feb this year?
Well, I haven't gotten an invitation yet. Nice. So hopefully if the folks out there who are getting the show together want to invite me, I'd love to come.
Well, they
be
got
on
a,
your
they,
panel.
They got a month to go, so let's find out. So what's new?
Well, I've just finished my 17th book on the winter solstice, two solstices before 2012. And it is basically something I do every year. At the end of each year, I kind of step aside from merely being an interpreter of other people's prophecies and make my own. As far as doing a little oracular work, that then I make these predictions for the coming year. People have read predictions for 2008, 2009, 2010. This will be my fourth of these kind of books. And what's unique about this one is that since this is the first year of a new decade, it defines what happens in the next 12 months will define a lot of what's going on in the next decade. So this book kind of expands and almost becomes not only a prediction for the coming 12 months, but a prediction for the coming 10 years. And it was a very difficult book to get into an oracular space to divine, because we are literally in a tangle of destinies. I've never seen a year that we just entered like this. It's tangled. It's, you know, any of you Wagnerians out there might remember the famous opening prophetic scene from the last opera of the Ring cycle of Wagner, with the three Norns, who are the Nordic. One sister is past, one sister is present, the other, the youngest sister, is future, and they're throwing the rope of destiny around, and they're trying to figure things out, and in the middle of the scene, it gets so tangled that the rope of time breaks. And I use that metaphor in the opening of my book, Predictions for 2011, which is an e-book I post for sale on HogueProphecy.com. Because that's literally, it's like I'm feeling as this author and interpreter that I am having to untangle the threads to make some linear sense of something that wants to tangle up and break.
You know, it's interesting, too. You say 2011, I say 2011. I don't think anyone's going to say 2011. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like no one says 1,987.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it's an easier thing. In Nostradamus' day, they used to just throw the first two numbers out. That's why a lot of his prophecies are intriguing, because he only gives the last two numbers, like when he talks about great treaties and unions being broken because of the captain of Greater Germany in the years 37, 41, and 45. You know, you look at those in the last 500 years, and the only ones they fit are 1900 or 1937, 41, 45. So the other thing, too, in numbers, since your last guest was talking so much about numbers, I want to ask you a question.
All right.
I wondered if any of your guests or any of your listeners have considered this interesting number coincidence with the tragedy of that 9-year-old child that died in the shooting of Congresswoman Giffords.
Yeah, I have, indeed. Now, Glynis talked about her birth date in a very uplifting way for the little girl. God rest her soul.
Well, what is intriguing numerically is that half the world, when that happened, was already in the 9th day of January of the 11th year. So it's 9/11. She was born on 9/11.
Yeah.
And 9/11 came again. It's very strange how 9s and 11s seem to come up.
And the shooter, by the way, was born on 9/10. Pretty darn close.
That's so strange. It's the same kind of numerical synchronicity that happened with 9/11 seems to be following in a harmonic with this. And so, you know, that also brings to mind what some people who want to make a huge anniversary about 9/11 this coming September that we have in 2011 certainly is a time to look out and be extra alert for any terrorist events. Although the important thing to understand is that we are now in a phase which I actually anticipated a couple of years before it happened in some of my books. We talked about this on your show before it happened, and that is this concept of lone wolf strategies of terrorism. I've always voiced my concern that as much as Al-Qaeda is a threat, I've always been far more concerned of nativist or native terrorists mm-hmm. in the United States, which would also be coming forth. And so, you know, we just have to be extra alert towards that, because it's the real danger month is not September, but November of this coming year. That has been a pattern that has been very clear for the last several years with terrorist events. So, but you know, the greatest weapon against terrorism, other than people having hope and economic capabilities and social freedoms, is awareness.
Yes.
And if people are alert, it's very hard for these things to happen.
John, do you use astrology or just merely your intuitiveness for your prophecies?
I use astrology because astrology is a very good way, or kind of a stellar language, if you will, to map the cycles of time that keep repeating. And one of the most fascinating cycles that's a subplot to this new book, Predictions for 2011, is we have returned since 2008 into a return of the cycle of the planet Pluto in Capricorn. Pluto in astrology is the sign, it's sort of like the backdrop to a whole age. It's sort of like the way I describe it is, it's those forces that you don't see, but without them you wouldn't exist. For mm-hmm. instance, right at this moment, we're all sitting or driving or listening to this show, and the Earth is hurtling through space at a very fast speed around the sun. And we take for granted the gravity that keeps us firmly on terra firma, that if it wasn't there, we'd all fly off into space.
What a trip.
But this is exactly the kind, in an astrology sense, this is the kind of hidden force behind everything that Pluto rules in the astrological language. And as it passes through each sign, it takes on the gravity or the gravitas of an era. It takes on the certain sign characteristics. With the fact that it's in Capricorn is ruled by ambition, political power, and also class systems, and also an attempt to find new architectural forms or systems of government and economy. These are the things that are defined. You look back into the past. The last time we were in Capricorn was 1762. Pluto's in Capricorn through 1777. When we were in that was the time when the Age of Enlightenment, as it was called in the West, happened, with Voltaire and Rousseau, and many people were beginning to see science as not over-dominated by superstition and dogma. It was an age of reason, was another coined phrase at the time. It was the time when people were rethinking the idea of, for instance, the pursuit of happiness was a completely radical concept up to that point. Some of our early writers and founding fathers in the United States. It was also the time when a certain power elite in the world, especially in the Western world, achieved, which is very Capricorn here, achieved a crystallization of dominance and power in the world. But equally, there was a rise of educated middle classes. More industrial classes that were creating the Industrial Revolution at that time. It's also creation of the last cycle about 250 years ago of Pluto and Capricorn. What happens in the early phases of that transit is that the elites welcome the middle class, but they're also a little afraid and want to control the middle class that is rising. And they begin this push comes to shove, which often leads finally to the masses of the middle classes rebelling against the tyranny of taxation without representation, of governance that is not local. All the things that led to the American Revolution, which is one of the benchmarks of the last Pluto transit into Capricorn. The Declaration of Independence was signed a year before the transit ended. If we are following the same pattern, then we're going to see, in fact, we're even seeing some of the shadows of the past. We had a Tea Party back then.
That's right.
Who got dressed up in crazy costumes and fuss and feathers and threw tea over the side because of taxation protest. It might have been, to some people's mind, even at that time, a silly and vulgar practice, but out of that bit of street theater came a more level-headed rebellion that led to the Founding Fathers, that led to the American Revolution, the Constitution of the United States, all Pluto and Capricorn, responses of the people to a power elite. So the question that my book, Predictions for 2011, asks is, since we are now in a new cycle of Pluto in Capricorn, what does that mean for America? Is that going to be a reboot of our American values, a refreshing of the American Revolution? Or is it a midlife crisis for the middle classes that began to rise in 250 years ago in Europe and the colonies? And is the torch now, has the torch been passed to a new global phenomenon of middle class aspirations that we see emerging in China, Indonesia, India, Brazil, other parts of the world, South America? And so my book looks at those possibilities, and it looks at the new aristocracy that is arising, that is trying to make its move. And I coined them by the phrase politicorp, which is the new aristocrat is not have a bloodline, but a black bottom line. The new aristocrats of the world are actually what I call the CE oligarchs. What's important to understand about these people is that they, I know there's a lot of people that like to think that there's some monolithic, highly organized, highly cynical, pulls the strings of everything behind everything, world order.
Sure.
And my experience going around the world and dealing with this is that the new aristocracy, certainly trying to press its muscle on the burgeoning new middle classes, but like the last time, these aristocracies were not some unified whole group pushing down the masses of Earth. They were actually fighting wars with each other constantly. And so the politicorp that's China Inc., the politicorp that's CE oligarchs of America, the politicorps, these are regional. A lot of these groups of this aristocracy are, like in the past, not so much stuck in national borders, but places of spheres of influence and mutual interest or animosity. So it's one of the big myths out there, I would say, that people in this chaotic group of aristocrats would love everybody to believe is that they're far more organized and planning our future against our freedoms as we like to think.
Yeah, they may like to, but I don't know how organized they are.
They are just as disorganized as us, with just a few more zeros on their bank accounts.
John, the big astrological story this week, they're saying that the pole shift is happening, and it's throwing the astrological charts up in array. I had an astrologer on for a little bit a couple nights ago, Mark Lerner. He said, nah, not happening.
Yeah, well, I agree with Mark. Mark is one of the best astrologers out there, and certainly rely on his work and some others to verify my own findings. And You know, a lot of that's a media hype, just like the famous Ophiuchus, who's supposed to be the poor 13th zodiac that's been neglected. You know, the trip about that is that they don't actually ask the astrologers. It's like people who don't speak the language tell me what the astrological language means. That'd be like somebody who speaks Swahili being my English teacher. You know, it doesn't speak English. One of the things that makes a constellation a zodiacal or zodiac constellation is that the line of the zodiac has to go through its full mass. There are several signs that have a toehold or a little piece of themselves extending into that line. But the 12 that surround the zodiac are the ones that have the line cleanly going through the mass of the constellation. So if you're going to put Ophiuchus in there, you can put about three other constellations as well and make it 14, 15 zodiacs. So, you know, what is pushing poor Ophiuchus into the scene are people who have it in mind, an agenda to disrupt the language of astrology. And they're mostly skeptics, professional skeptics, and debunkers.
I want to talk for just a second about your thoughts of the presidential election in 2012. You have been 100% in making accurate choices since 1968, who the next president will be. I went out on a limb tonight, John, and after watching President Barack Obama last night in his Tucson speech, I think he's got a great chance of getting reelected. I would not have said that 2 months ago. You did, though, on this program. You believed he was going to get reelected. Do you still believe that?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, even we were talking about this when it seemed, even for my personal opinion, you know, a lot of the things that I predict that don't jive with
well,
my personal
opinion. It's important everybody understands our personal decisions intuitively about prophecy does not mean that's how we feel personally.
Yeah.
But go ahead, John.
But certainly, I know I was on your show a couple of years back, and there was quite a kerfuffle with emails and people coming to me saying, how can you believe that Barack Obama can have a second term? You know, and they thought it was a projection that I was an Obamaite. I didn't vote for him. I'm an old Nixonian Republican, frankly. half of the 11 people I successfully predicted, a good number of them were in one party or the other. So I don't make these predictions based on my own
personal
desires. But what I've seen about Barack Obama, and I saw it, and we talked about it a year before he was even running for president.
Right.
In 2007, early 2007, we were talking about how Barack Obama I saw this destiny of president in him, but that he has to watch out that he doesn't come to his destiny too soon, or it could end up tragic. It's better to come to your destiny too soon than too late. Because you have some momentum. So there's an outside chance that your learning curve, if you've got the metal to do it, will temper you through the fire. Barack Obama was supposed to be president in 2012. He came 4 years earlier than his destiny. That's what I contended, and I said the proof of the point of this prophecy will be that he's going to really have a struggling, hard time his first few years. And what's important after the break is to talk about how important this year is and how I define it, because it's something very similar to Lincoln.
It is fascinating. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with John Hogue. His website, hogueprophecy.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. John Hogue, our special guest tonight for the next couple hours. We'll take phone calls next hour with John. We'll talk about his prophecies when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got John Hogue with us tonight. John, as we talk about the presidency of Barack Obama, of course, you felt he would win in 2008, and your thoughts about 2012.
I think he will win. I see him. The thing that I've wondered is, does he win upon his own merits, or does he win because the opposition cannot capture the voice of moderate America?
You would think right now the opposition would be strong, but I feel something. I don't know if voters want to throw out incumbents. If they have to, they will, obviously, and they have. But I'm not sure they want to.
There's an important factor to consider into this. Again, it's one of those gravitas or gravity, little invisible things that you don't often see. But in astrology and in timekeeping of prophecy, there's this periods that we go through where we're a little more emotionally or hysterically driven than at other times. It's almost like there's more yang energy for about 36 years, and then there's a more yin energy. We've passed into the yin, more emotional energy since 2008. And we're going to be in that period till 2044. And so in these periods, people who can capture the collective emotions of a nation, for good or ill, and capture the feeling of a nation are the people that are going to win in elections. And I think it sometimes transcends incumbency. The thing that I've always said about Barack Obama is, even though he definitely, I would almost even say, seduced the left and had quite an almost emotional rock star kind of thing that you expect in these kinds of periods of cyclic history that got him into office. As I forewarned, the honeymoon of that was going to be over, and he was going to have a tough time dealing with all the people who projected their idea of what change we can believe in was on his mirror, and are all having some frustrations about it not being the way they thought it would be. And I had said on your show that he would turn out, after all the campaign, to be quite a pragmatic, middle-of-the-road president. And I think that's going to continue.
Mm-hmm. It has to.
And I think that he is going to... I wrote probably the longest chapter in my new book, Predictions for 2011, is called The Second Coming of Change We Can Believe In? And it looks at this strange karma that Barack Hussein Obama has with President Abraham Lincoln seems both presidents in their first 2 years, generally the public opinion was they were failures, one-term wonders. In Lincoln's case, it was even worse. On the battlefields of the Civil War, where Barack Obama's had his disasters on the battlefields of economy and health care, Abe Lincoln had it on the Civil War battlefield, so it was much worse for Lincoln, and the thought was the whole Union was going to collapse. We're not quite at that point yet with Barack Obama, but in both cases, both men have a very karmic similarity in that their year number three in their first term was the turning tide year. Had to be. Lincoln had his Gettysburg. Barack Obama will also have to have his Gettysburg, most likely on the battlefield of economy. Although... great presidents are often not made by crises, but great presidents exploit them. And the situation that happened for Barack Obama just recently reminds me very much of how Bill Clinton had revitalized himself in the eyes of the collective American emotion and understanding after his speech, after Tim McVeigh blew up the Murrah Federal Building, that in a similar way, he kind of turned the tide in a lot of his troubles after losing both the House and the Senate in 1994. The similar thing has happened in the speech last night. There were moments where I, too, could see, well, there's a glimmer of the other side of this prediction that I don't actually personally follow or understand, but I, as a person who makes predictions, will, for the record, put them down, that this bridge is being built. I can see where he will be a second-term president. And then we'll see if in his second term, in my more distant prediction, he really starts to become a great president. It seems like he's going to have to take a whole term to learn how to be a president, learn how to be an executive. I think that's going to happen. Although, with saying that, one of the reasons why it may not happen is that the opposition may not find itself in enough unity. And I have a whole chapter about that called, I coined a new phrase, where I looked at the political climate of Washington, D.C. in the year 2011, and I changed the name of our capital to Watsington, D.C., where there are certain astrological things that are happening, especially in February, very rare aspect of Mercury-Mars conjunction in Pisces, which happens February of 2011. It happens again at the opening of the next Congress a few years down the line, February of 2013 in the early months. And it doesn't happen again till March 2026. And what's intriguing about those dates, especially 2026, is that that year has come up in more than one seer's record of the time when we actually have to make a new constitution, when there may have been some kind of either reform in the United States or a revolution in the United States.
You see civil unrest, don't you?
Well, I do, but not in a fatalistic way. I see that as an option, a destiny in the tangle of the destinies that we're trying to untangle here, as one that we don't have to follow down. In the book, I have found some very interesting passages and reflections of Thomas Jefferson about things that it sounds like he's talking about our times and the danger of corporations taking away the freedoms of people. It's very fascinating stuff that he reflected on after he stepped down from being president, finished his term. And the riotousness of I'm not talking about fires in the streets or firebrands thrown in the Capitol building, but I am talking about a real struggle between those who have allowed corporate bodies to be considered equal to average American citizens, that have their tendrils into the pockets for funding and campaigning, funding different groups that are not even on shore, that go all the way to China, that go all the way to Russia. That there's one of the biggest scandals that is coming in Watsington, D.C. of 2011 is just seeing how far the year of the rabbit hole goes in the Chinese astrology, and seeing how Chinese corporations have had a lot to do with financing who people picked on both sides of the aisle to in the midterm elections. And that's going to be one of the big scandals that's coming, that this international corporate takeover is an attempt to, sometimes in the name of taking government back or taking government out of people's lives, there are certain large forces, financial forces, that would like to use that motto as a way to actually deconstruct our freedoms. And that's what you expect in a Pluto-Capricorn cycle, only now it has its new and modern context. Now, there is, and as a scholar, I have my, this is of the three destinies we're looking at, this is the destiny that I will say is going to happen. And usually what I will say is, if I find one weak link in that, I will say it. For instance, I was saying that Hillary Clinton would be president in 2008. I said, if one weak link would be that she would not reconcile her vote to vote in favor of the invasion of Iraq. And it would upset enough liberals in the Democratic mm-hmm. Party that in a tight election with Barack Obama, she would lose, and that happened.
And she was the front runner for
yeah.
a while.
And I
she?
Said that when she was the front runner. That was the one, I called it Hillary Clinton's albatross, taking the rhyme of the ancient sea mariner, and I wrote about it, I think, in 2007 or early 2008, and I said, this is the one link that will prevent her from having a destiny. Because, see, destinies aren't written in stone. They're right now, as I'm talking to you, George, millions of people are going to download this or listening to it now, and millions more will listen, and it will be spread virally through the internet. And we probably have a number of the people who are going to be on the floor of the Congress debating these things coming up, actually listening right now.
Absolutely. There's no question.
And I know from my own contacts, I have people listening to me right into the cabinet of the president. And so when someone is making prophecy in this way and in such a large audience, we're already changing the future. And this is where prophecy becomes a persuasion, not just a forecast, to see what is dangerous and then let people in their free will decide another course. We don't have to go back to the partisanship that this tragedy has cooled off for a while. However, I don't see this cooling off of the extreme rhetoric on the extreme right and left lasting much longer until February and March. Then you're going to see them right back at each other again. One of the things that comes up again and again in predictions for 2011 is, in so many ways, existence is saying, I'm sending you messages. I'm sending it in the climate. I'm sending it in the dysfunction of your governments. I'm sending it in Supreme Courts that let corporations become equal to you when they're multi-billion, multinational corporations. They're the same citizen with freedom of speech as you, only they got much bigger pockets to influence the elections that your little ballot can't influence. When all these things are happening, and if people aren't taking notice of that, if in the year 2010, less people believe there's such a thing as climate change than before, after that outrageously violent and strange, weird year of weather, which I forecasted. Of course, the consequence is, if nature is trying to send us a message, it's almost like an avatar. You know, the sky people send us a message, well, we're going to send them a message. Well, Mother Nature is going to send you a redoubled, more intense message of weather disruptions, climate change, natural disasters. And I mean, look how this year started.
Oh, my God. And how close will we get to Edgar Cayce's prophecies, John, about Earth changes?
Well, we're in them.
Yeah.
And whether, to get back to what you were saying about the axis shifting, what's actually happening is the magnetic pole of North Pole is shifting about, is shifting each year. It's still, I know there's a lot of excitement about it being really a big shift, but it still is about 25 miles, I think, is about 25 miles a year. And, you know, beyond the 2012ers and the doomsters and all the people that get all excited about that and make a living doing that, something I like to do is, you know, since I've been writing in the early 80s, I've uncovered a lot of strange stuff. But I often try to find, rather than jump at a paranormal solution to what a mystery, I try to find the normal solution. And that's not because I'm trying to put down any unusual thing, but it's because I care that much about finding a truly paranormal experience that I will try to see the normal of it. For instance, like all the birds dying. I have a series in HogueProphecy.com where I'm explaining that, as strange as some of that looks, whether you think it's some kind of ray gun turning blackbirds' insides into goo, or that the harp system is upsetting the weather and the birds are falling out of the sky because of that, I can cite prophets and historians from the dawn of civilization having same oddball things happening. Fish falling out of the sky, frogs, blood rains, which are really dust. And there are, for these very strange climatological phenomenon, oftentimes is very rational, scientific answer to something that looks paranormal. What is significant about our times is the level in which we're having die-offs indicates that the climate's in trouble. When one of the things that the pole shifting, magnetic pole shifting, is doing, says the scientists who are not psychic paranormal types, it is disrupting migrations of birds. They're leaving for the south when winter comes a little late. Mm-hmm. And that's not surprising if they're a month late in their navigation that they fly up over Italy and get hit by a violent storm updraft that sends them way higher to an altitude that they can't sustain and suffocates them, and they fall dead out of the sky frozen. That stuff like that happens. In my story, there's a documented story on one of my last blogs that came from 2010, early 2010, where people in the middle of the outback desert in the Northwest Territories of Australia had, out of the blue sky, came a whole bunch of fish. Fell right out of there. And what happened is they were carried as far as 300 miles by updrafts of a tornado or something, that cyclone that went over some water, and actually were kept carried up in the updrafts and then deposited like hundreds of miles away from where they came from. And stuff like that happens. The frequency of it happening is telling us, and the more biblical prophetic quality of that is happening is just telling us that the world's climate and natural balance is disrupted.
It's way out of whack, isn't it?
And look at what happened. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are writing to me from Brisbane, Australia, which I used to be in. I used to be in Australia for several months, and I'd seen that lovely town and area. And the monsoons in the last 3 years have gotten very powerful, even beyond and above cyclonic storms and hurricanes. The monsoon floods, from just the general monsoonal flow, has seemed to have gotten a third stronger in the last 3 years. That's a significant thing, because the final chapter of this book is where it really predictions for 2011 really waxes biblical, because I call it alarms sound the unsustainable. That's the main warning for this year that we're in, is that we're going to see the klaxon to certain sustainability issues begin to ring, with one incident here, one incident there. And if we're listening, we'll recognize the alarm is on. If we're not, in the next 9 years, the alarm bell will be ringing nonstop, and it'll be too late. And these are situations with food sustainability. The droughts that hit Russia are going to continue. The breakdown of Russian exports, a third largest grain exporter in the world, has already had significant impact on the poorer countries who can't afford to sustain themselves with the less grain that's available.
That's going to be huge, John.
Yeah, and also the other thing is that we're now seeing Neptune move back into its home sign of Pisces in April. And I call this year the year of the great ocean storms. And certainly the monsoons coming off the back end of Queensland, backing through the back door into the outback and completely turning it into a lake in Queensland, Australia.
Yep, they're the first line. Yep, absolutely. John, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment. We'll talk more about your work, a little bit of Nostradamus, and of course we'll take phone calls with John Hoag in our final hour when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Again, John's website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com.